Hello and welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel, where the SEC is still planning to play football as we record this podcast. We assume that'll be the way it will be for at least a couple days. John, has your level of confidence changed at all in these last 72 hours about whether there will be an SEC football season?
Yes, it has, because I think one conference can't help but be influenced by another when they're both in the same Power Five aggregation. However, the SEC has kind of plotted its own course on this throughout the pandemic, and it's done things a little differently than the Big Ten. I think that's certainly true. So even if the Big Ten or Pac-12 says we're not playing, I still would hold out the possibility that the SEC would play.
We're recording this podcast at 11 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday morning, and I mention that because things are changing almost by the minute right now in college football. So by the time this podcast publishes, it's possible something will have changed. But to set the stage right now, as we record this, the Big Ten has not formally voted to cancel football in 2020. There were a lot of conflicting reports on Monday about whether it was going to cancel, whether it was just thinking about it but hadn't reached that decision yet. But as we stand here right now, the Big Ten has not canceled. And the Pac-12 seems to be furthest down the road among Power Five conferences alongside the Big Ten. The Big 12, ACC, and SEC are in much more of a holding pattern. From the FBS level, we've already seen two conferences cancel football for the fall. The MAC canceled, and then the Mountain West Conference on Monday said there would be no football for the fall. John, you mentioned that the Big Ten, if it falls, wouldn't necessarily directly mean that the SEC has to fall. But it also seems pretty unlikely that the SEC would just entirely go it alone and play football this fall if one conference after another topples. And I mean, Greg Sankey said as much on an interview on the Dan Patrick Show on Tuesday morning. So how many conferences do you think need to play this season for the SEC to feel like they have some strength in numbers there?
Well, since I'm an SEC guy, I would just go with one other conference. If the Big 12 or the ACC says we want to play, then the SEC could. You also might have some Big Ten teams jump in there like Nebraska and Ohio State, help fill out some of those schedules. I don't understand why the Pac-12 or Big Ten feel compelled to make a decision right now. They could do what the SEC has done and postpone the season until the latter part of September. And you know how this virus has gone. Things could change drastically in that amount of time. Greg Sankey's mentioned this before about the value of patience, and I've heard other people, both medical and in the athletic realm, say the same thing. You have to be patient. Let's see how it goes. To me, Blake, an overriding issue here is player safety. And we're having more and more people, coaches, players, whatever, say they could be safer playing football than they would be by not playing football. Idle hands, so to speak.
I want to push back on that a little bit, though, John, because to me that reeks of a PR tactic, and I don't entirely understand where this idea of, you know, a lot of the coaches will say, well, they're safer here on campus than they are running around wherever they're going to be. I mean, UT's not talking about canceling the fall semester or moving to online only classes. So if they cancel the season, why would they all be sent home? I mean, couldn't they still train in the facility? Couldn't they still be on campus? Couldn't they still have all those safety measures that the athletic department has in place and be on campus, but they just don't play a season? I think that's the part of the narrative that coaches are conveniently leaving out. They're acting like these coaches or these colleges are just going to kick them out and send them all home. That's not really what it seems like would happen.
I have a little bit different take on that. Yeah, I could see them. I'm assuming they would still be on campus. I just think if student athletes, 20 years old or so, are playing football, that's their prime objective. And they will put that above everything else. And they will do what they need to do to prepare for a game and to keep playing. I think they would be much more cognizant about their health and well-being if they're playing football and focused on that than if they're just out there. Because we've seen it this summer where so many cases in that age group, early 20s, have contracted the disease. I have no evidence to support this theory, but it's just kind of based on a general idea about college football players. I just think they're going to want to go out. But if they're playing football, they know, man, I better not go out. If I get this, then I might spread it to the rest of the team, and then we won't be able to beat South Carolina or Missouri this week.
Yeah, that's a good point. It can be a real – the season can be a good motivating factor to try to stay healthy, to try to monitor themselves and their personal time and socially distance in ways, because they know – you're right. If they get sick, that means they can't play, and it might mean that the whole team can't play. And so, yeah, I think that's a good point. I think a lot of these coaches talking about how players are all going to be off at home acting like – you know, running all over the country like hooligans. That seems like a bit of a stretch to me. But I do think that it stands to reason that when anyone in life has something that motivates them, something to work toward, you know, they are a little more intent on doing what needs to be done to make sure that that goal is achieved. So I think that could be a fair argument. It seems like, you know, we've seen multiple national media reports now about what some of these conference commissioners, at least according to these reports, are spooked by, are sort of the unknowns health effects caused by this virus. And, you know, we've seen multiple reports about, you know, heart effects on the heart, even after, you know, you've seemingly recovered from the virus. And that seems to have, you know, the commissioner spooked a little bit, because I think all along the belief has been just the very small percentage of people in that age bracket that die if they get the virus. But as we've talked about before, you know, there are so many other layers to this than just whether someone's likely to die from this or not, you know, because we are learning more about the virus all the time, and we don't really have a full grasp on some of the health effects it can have for people that catch it and recover and don't suffer any drastic effects, but could still have other effects below the surface.
Sure. I think, when you mention heart, that gets everybody's attention. A virus, it doesn't have to be the COVID-19 that could affect the heart. I mean, there are studies that have shown, I've read a lot about the heart. There are some theories that like a viral infection is more dangerous than, say, high cholesterol in terms of inducing a heart attack. So we still get back to the point, do we think you're more apt to catch it if you're playing football than if you're not in that age group? To me, that has to be one of the main priorities.
You know, one other thing I thought was interesting with this is just the difficulty. Let's say the SEC commits to playing, just the difficulty in actually doing it, because the SEC released its regulations in terms of COVID-19 last week. And one of the things it talked about was high contact exposures and how those people are going to have to be in quarantine for 2 weeks after a high contact exposure. And so I just wonder, you know, and it went on to define a high contact exposure of greater than 15 minutes within 6 feet of somebody. Well, if an offensive lineman gets the virus, I'm not sure by the definition of high contact exposure. I mean, how could the whole offensive line not be in quarantine? You know, and so I think there's going to be a lot of difficulties just in terms of logistics of the season of getting through it with, if they actually follow the rules. And you know, maybe I'm just not understanding exactly the way high contact exposure is going to be defined. But, you know, I would think if you're left guard tests positive for the virus, well, that's going to be high contact exposure for all your left tackles and centers, you know? And so it just seems like it's going to be really hard to navigate those quarantine rules, because what's interesting is testing doesn't eliminate the need to quarantine. You know, you would think, well, maybe if they test negative, they wouldn't need to quarantine, but at least according to the rules they outline, that's not the case. And so that seems to be a real difficult hoop to jump through.
No, I agree. I mean, this is going to be very tricky. And I think there's the possibility that we look at what's happened with Major League Baseball. I think the Cardinals have only played 5 games so far. Some teams have played 15 or 16 games. So there are going to be a lot of bumps in the road, maybe severe bumps, and you're just going to have to manage through that. There's also the possibility you could start the season and you'd have to stop it. I think all of that is in play, but to me, I still think it's worth making the effort and trying, because you start talking about the alternatives now. We don't know what the pandemic situation could be like in the spring, or if you talk about February football, how do we know it won't be worse? And when you say, well, I know Russia's come out with a vaccine, but they haven't bothered testing it on anybody yet. You want to give it a shot? I don't think so. You know, that's kind of an important part of the trials. So we just don't know what the climate will be like in the spring. So we can't. And I think it would be very risky when you talk about all the other injuries that go along with this sport to play in the spring and then turn around and play again in September. Push back the next season till October, November, I don't know. I just, no matter what you do, I think you better have a plan B, C, D, and E. You just don't know how it might go. So that's why I think it would be worth giving it a shot.
You mentioned the Big Ten and whether the SEC should or has to do what the Big Ten does. It's been interesting throughout all this because – you know, the SEC wants to make it clear that they don't bow down to any other conference, but we've seen multiple times that the Big Ten has been the trendsetter. You know, back in the spring, the Big Ten was the first to cancel its spring sports seasons. The SEC, for a while, acted like even though there was going to be no College World Series, no Women's College World Series, the SEC acted for a few days like it might go ahead and just resume the season without even a postseason on hand. And then, you know, a handful of days later, it finally canceled its season. It was the last Power 5 league to cancel its spring season. And then we had in early July, the Big Ten became the first conference to move to a conference-only schedule. The SEC acted very surprised by that. You know, why do this now? Greg Sankey said that really doesn't have much effect on us. It's really only an indirect effect. And a month later, the SEC went to a conference-only schedule. Now, you pointed out a difference, though, in that not every time have they done exactly what the Big Ten did, because even though the SEC went to a conference-only schedule, it did change the calendar. The SEC set for a September 26th opening kickoff, and the Big Ten set for September 5th. So the SEC bumped its season back by 3 weeks. So I think we can say that the Big Ten has been in the lead on a lot of this. They've been a predictor of future actions by other conferences, but it's not 100% that whatever the Big Ten does, everybody else will do. I mean, do you think that's sort of fair to say?
Yeah, and I don't know what Sankey's thinking on this is, if he's consciously thinking, well, we don't want to look as though we're just reacting to whatever the Big Ten does and falling in line with our big brother. We're the number one conference in the country. We do what we want to do. And, oh, if it also happens to be what the Big Ten chose to do, then we'll still do it. We won't go the other way just out of spite. We will go ahead, we will make our own decision if we think that's the best course. I mean, that's the way to go. But I think those other issues, certainly important. How you do your schedule, what spring sports you cancel, they're not tantamount to canceling a football season. And I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on SEC schools to play.
Yeah, and let's dive into that a little more, because I wanted to ask you about this. The pressure is going to come from a lot of circles, but one of the circles it's going to come from are politicians. We've seen that already. President Trump tweeted yesterday that basically he wants to see a college football season. We saw Tim Burchett posted on Twitter that the SEC needs to figure out a way to have a football season. We've seen Congress people from other states, Big Ten states in Nebraska, I'm thinking about in Ohio, react to the rumblings on Monday that the Big Ten could be on the verge of canceling its season. How much do you think, you know, at Tennessee, we saw lawmakers react and insert themselves during the Greg Schiano situation. You know, there was a lot of blowback in multiple circles from fans, from donors, from business owners. But I think one thing, you know, so many people think about, like, when they talk about the Schiano situation, the fans revolted. Well, okay, sure, the fans got mad on Twitter and about 100 people gathered, maybe it wasn't even 100, a smattering of people gathered on campus. But I think just as important, if not more so than that, was the political response in the state. How much pressure do you think will be coming from that circle, or do you see the pressure to play football being more influential from other circles in the SEC?
I think it's hard to ascertain how much from each group, but I think there will be a political factor to it. I also think it's very popular now to talk about player rights, you know, how they need to have more say-so in things. Well, the players are saying they want to play. I think that's a factor too. Let's face it. Let's take Alabama, for example. Nick Saban's the most important person in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban says, we want to play. Well, who wants to dispute that from Alabama? Who's going to say, well, Nick Saban, what does he know? Well, he's got five Alabama national championships. That's what he knows. He's the kingpin there. So I think these coaches, I think even Ryan Day at Ohio State, I mean, I think the university in Alabama, yeah, they've got an athletic director, they've got chancellor, whatever. But Nick Saban is a guy you can't go against. And I think Nick Saban can make a very compelling argument why they should play. I don't think it would just be bluster. So I think you would have pressure from that. So also I wonder about, and it's hard to measure this too, but what about people that donate millions of dollars to this university, who might also be businessmen, local businessmen? Now, we don't know yet the fan component to this, but even if there aren't fans in the stands, I still think could be an economic impact on the town.
You mentioned the players coming out and saying, I mean, we saw across college football over the weekend, a lot of players joining the We Want to Play movement and making that a big thing on social media, especially. I mean, that's the thing in this day and age. All players have a voice because of social media. And it's, to be fair, it's not to a man. I mean, there's been multiple players. We're well into the double digits now of players opting out, as we predicted that they would, especially in terms of the draft. We might see some guys do that are going to be drafted players. But you know, it's interesting to me with the We Want to Play stuff, because on the one hand, I don't think that means anything. On the other hand, I think it means a lot. It means a lot, I think, from the public relations standpoint. I think if you're a chancellor or an athletic director or a football coach that really wants to play football, it's a lot easier to sell that decision to the public when you have all these players saying that they want to play. I mean, you just sell it as we're doing what the players want. We're giving them some ownership in this decision. on the other hand, where I think it's sort of meaningless is, you know, if you have a player who's concussed in a football game, he's going to look at the head ball coach and the trainer and say, I want to play. Get me back on the field. I mean, all these athletes, if given the choice, in almost every scenario, they want to play. And there are times where there has to be an adult in the room. I realize the athletes are adults, but, you know, someone who's not an athlete, I'll say, in the room to make that decision for them and to have their health and safety at their best interests in mind and make that decision because they know that players are always going to want to play. So from that perspective, I think it's sort of meaningless because, you know, in all times when it comes to health and safety, there needs to be someone else making that decision because athletes are always going to choose to play. But I do think from a public relations standpoint, it's a lot easier to sell a season when you're saying, hey, the players are on board. We're not just forcing this season to happen so we can make millions of dollars for the university. We're doing this because the players want to do it.
I agree. I think, though, I understand your point. I also think, though, like in a case of with a concussion, people can say, well, the guy's not thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
He's been mentally affected by this concussion. Whereas if he had another injury, if his, you know, maybe he would think differently. I don't know. But I agree that players do want to play. I think what helps their case is when someone as high profile as a Trevor Lawrence says he wants to play. Clemson's quarterback, he's already won one national championship. He'll be the number one player taken in the draft probably in 2021. And it doesn't matter how he spends the next half of the year. He, no matter what he does, he'll still be number one. Yet he's saying, I want to play. I think that carries more weight than if an average player says that. So we have people coming out like Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback, the Oklahoma State running back, Hubbard has come out and said the same thing. So I think that carries more weight than just the rank and file guys doing it.
John, predictions in this day and age are probably don't mean much and can change by the day, but you're a columnist. You're used to making predictions. You're comfortable being wrong. So
yes, I am. You better be comfortable being wrong.
Your prediction on, as we record this on August 11th, will Tennessee be playing a football game on September 26th as scheduled?
I'll say it will. What do you think?
I'm not a columnist. I'm not as we'll see. I hope you are right. I hope that the season happens. I know both of us do, and I hope that you know, they find a way to do it as safely as possible. But as each day passes, I become less and less convinced. So
I'm offering hope, Blake.
I'll take it. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.